Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have on the program author Rob Costello. And we are going to be talking about his new novel titled Coinage of Commitment. So born in Philadelphia, Rob Costello started writing fiction at actually age 8, very young. He began in the science fiction genre, and after high school, his writing interests shifted. And then while attending Drexel University, he composed a series of novellas, most of them love stories set against the backdrop of World War II. After college, besides pursuing an engineering career in the Gulf Coast region, he wrote more stories, a teeth-cutting first novel, and a little poetry. While writing Coinage of Commitment, his interests focus on the question of what romantic love can achieve in people's lives. Rob and his wife live near Houston, Texas. So I'm just so delighted to have Rob on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Rob.
Thank you, Juanita. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Wonderful, wonderful. So your first novel, how does it feel to actually have it out in print on shelves?
It feels wonderful.
I bet. You know, you have been writing since you were young. I had just mentioned that. What has your writing meant to you through the years as it's changed and evolved? And with writing and publishing your first book, is this basically the beginning of a new career for you?
It is. I am now writing full-time and hope to continue into the indefinite future.
Mm-hmm. So what has your writing meant to you through the years? Has it been an outlet? Is it where you're exploring ideas? What has it meant to you?
Well, in a way, it's been more an attempt to give something back in terms of romantic relationships.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a freshman in college, I met a girl that took my breath and my heart away.
Uh-huh.
And years later, even after we had kids and we were in a demanding career situation, we still were measuring life by the time that we spent together. The humbling thing about that realization is that I realized that even though I had studied romantic love most of my life, I'd always had an interest in it. It was my wife who was teaching me how to keep it fresh. So writing became a way that I was trying to give something back to the reader.
Okay. So most of the writing that you've really done in your adult life is centered around this theme of romantic love. So what really has spurred this interest? I know you just said your wife has, but why such a passion for romance?
I guess it really has to do with the fact that so many people leave so much on the table in terms of the relationships that they have and that they end up with, and it just seems like people could be a lot happier and more fulfilled if they put more or if they invested more in those relationships.
Mm-hmm. And you found that investment has just made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay. So your new novel, Coinage of Commitment, I understand was actually spurred on by a book you read when you were researching books and films with the theme of romantic love. Would you tell us more about that?
Yeah. What happened there was that I had, as you mentioned, I wrote earlier in life, and then I kind of walked away from writing, and I left it for quite some time, but I continued to have this interest in romance, and I studied love stories in books and in films. And then in 2005, I read a novel that was very well written, but the ending was so disjointedly tragic that I felt profound outrage.
Oh my God!
Of all the women readers that I'm sure were disappointed in the way the book ended, and within 24 hours I started writing Coinage of Commitment.
Oh wow! Interesting. So, do you read a lot of romance novels, or are you more interested at this point in the writing aspect?
Right now, I don't have that much time to read the way I used to. I'm mainly writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you probably have read a lot, and now it's your time to say something and put across your point of view.
Well, I still enjoy love stories in film.
Mm-hmm. So writing in the genre of romance, you know, it's typically the genre is dominated by female authors. So tell us about the challenges or the advantages that you found being a male author in the romance genre.
Yeah, this is an issue that's been pointed out to me, but I really wasn't much aware of it during the time that I was trying to sell the book. From the very start of my query campaign, I actually aimed my letters and sample chapters at women editors
mm-hmm.
and agents. And then once I got into the game and I realized that my whole end of the publishing industry was heavily dominated by women, I actually felt relieved.
Oh, wow.
I think, if anything, being a man may have given me a certain advantage, you know, from a kind of a novelty standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only was I a male engineer, of all things, with no detectable writing credentials, I was daring to show up with a love story, but I was touting it as a love story really unlike any other. Well, it did make them look up from their keyboards. Even from across the whole Internet, I could feel their skeptical smiles.
Interesting. So what is that the only advantage? What were some other advantages?
Well, I had advantages related to temperament.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, women have always been my epitome of beauty, and I've always admired the feminine spirit and disposition.
Mm-hmm.
The nobility of her biological calling, the sophistication and elegance of her romantic impulses, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I've always worked very well with women. Plus, frankly, I'm grateful. So much of what I learned about romantic love, I learned from a woman, namely my wife.
That's great. That's wonderful. So tell us about Coinage of Commitment. So who were the lovers in this story? What's the storyline? Give listeners today an idea of what this book is all about.
Coinage of Commitment, it's really a love story about two people, Wayne and Nancy, who grew up on opposite sides of the country. They're from very different backgrounds. And they share one thing in common that will attract them to each other. Each has matured, wanting to experience romantic fulfillment that is superior to the relationships they see all around them. They not only want this, but they give it active pursuit. And in Nancy's case, she turns her yearnings into a study of ways that couples can achieve love at a higher level and attain it and sustain it for the duration. In 1968, our characters meet while he's attending Blue Collar Drexel and she is at neighboring Ivy League Penn. Although they're irresistibly drawn together for the stratospheric love they sense they can attain in each other, they have to overcome obstacles posed by the class, financial, and religious differences that separate them, as well as opposition from both families. And later there's this twist of fate that will be the cruelest test for them of all.
So it sounds like a surprise ending.
Yeah, there is a twist at the end for the reader.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's great. So you just mentioned that your two main characters, Wayne and Nancy, they really do come from different parts of the country, different classes, different family backgrounds. Tell us a little more about their differences and how this really shapes their determination to create a higher love for themselves.
Well, as I mentioned, there are these huge differences between them, including class.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy's from a well-to-do California family, and Wayne is from a blue-collar background.
Mm-hmm.
And so the story centers a lot around how they overcome those differences, how they adjust themselves for the success of their romantic commitment. Of course, they have physical attraction on their side,
mm-hmm.
But it's mainly the hunger for the quality of romantic love that's superior to the run-down, worn-out relationships that they see in couples all around them. That's really what is the big draw for them.
Mm-hmm.
They sense that they can achieve the fulfillment in each other that they've dreamed of since they were kids.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think a lot of people actually have that vision of that higher love that you really kind of spotlight in this book?
I think so, but it's hard to know what the numbers look like. You know, if you look at the pattern of sales of books and especially of movie ticket sales,
mm-hmm.
I think that there's an element there you can see in the success of stories like Pride and Prejudice, that people are looking for something better.
Yeah. Yep. Something isn't working, so they really are looking for something higher. Tell us a little more about Nancy's idea of romantic love, and I think that you call it aesthetic love. Tell us.
That's what she calls it in the story.
Yeah.
Nancy is very analytical,
mm-hmm.
and she sits down as a teenager, and she starts collecting these bullet items that she calls precepts, and she starts putting them in a notebook.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to bog the book down with listing too many of these, but two of the four that I think are mentioned in the book are, you know, prepared to give more than you receive, and go the extra mile in staying attractive to your mate as a statement of love's constancy.
Mm-hmm.
Later she explores and she collects higher concepts that she calls issues. The one I have in the story is what I call the freedom versus possession balance issue.
Mm-hmm.
And she states it as follows. How do you hold your beloved to you to satisfy yourself, that sense of possession, but still give him enough freedom to be himself, to go on being the person you fell for to begin with? And then finally, after years more study and thinking, she comes up with a higher principle she calls the missing piece. And there's kind of a sub-story in the book about how she comes up with this. I won't go into it in a lot of detail here, but it is a way she feels she can align the knowledge of her system in a way that fuels emotion, potentially giving her the means to keep love fresh into the future. It's really this issue of how do you keep it fresh going into the future that's key to what she's trying to achieve.
Mm. And is this kind of, does this evolve through the whole story, or is this basically, you know, something that she's come up with, but then we see it play out in the story? How does it all unfold?
Yeah, it really is something that she's developed, but what she doesn't realize when she develops it is that she doesn't realize that things will be harder than she thinks and that batteries are not included.
Nope.
So she goes into the relationship,
mm-hmm.
thinking that she has this system, and there's a lot in the book about her background and her previous experiences and things of this nature. She really feels that she has a clear shot here, but they quickly run into challenges, and there's a lot in the story about the things that make it difficult for them to get together and achieve the fulfillment that they've been trying to have.
Mm. Do you think that those are just the natural challenges that couples face in marriage, or are these specific to their relationship?
This one is a little bit different. I don't think most couples will face quite the mix of challenges that you see in coinage of commitment. There's just so many differences arrayed against these two, including opposition from both families. There's a scene in the book where Wayne has this terrible fight with his father over the fact that he's living with this girl, and his family considers him to be a virtual gigolo.
Mm.
And so, you know, you can imagine the kind of humiliation that he feels over this.
Yeah.
And so those are the kinds of things that I think make the book a more interesting read, but I don't think that most couples face quite this steep a challenge.
Quite that, yeah. Okay. So where did this whole idea come from about the intellectualization of love and Nancy's idea of romantic love? You know, I'd like you to put it in a context of your own experience, because it sounds like you and your wife have been able to keep the magic alive. So how much maybe was your wife's influence in this book or in this idea? And how did the idea come about?
Well, she had a lot to do with making me realize that it was possible.
Mm.
But, you know, there's another way to view this. If you look at nonfiction literature, there's a lot of books written about how to improve relationships.
Right.
The technology, as we apply it, as we've developed it for romantic relationships, if you read nonfiction, has become more advanced over the last generation or so. You can go into any bookstore and pick up probably a dozen books on how to improve relationships. But if you look at fiction literature today is pretty much the same as when Jane Austen wrote it, and there hasn't been very much advancement in how fiction is dealing with romantic love. And so my book is an attempt to make that that step forward and to give people a good read and at the same time show them a little bit more in terms of what can be achieved in the romantic sphere.
Mm-hmm. That's a really, really great point. You know, I think that a lot of romance novels that are out there are really still in kind of a fantasy realm. So do you then obviously really feel that this type of love is possible in real life and it's not just a concept for a good novel?
Oh, I do, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what's discouraging to me is a lot of people have given up on this.
Mm-hmm.
I see so many couples who are just so humdrum with being turned off with each other, a habit, that marriage is just a habit, it's just taking things for granted, and yet you know they could have so much more.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you think is standing in the way?
I think part of it is that we're social animals and we tend to get very comfortable with what we see around us. And so there's a lot of people in this kind of mode, and I think there just needs to be a way that we can get people to see that, hey, it doesn't have to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
After successfully completing the challenging process of publishing a book, many authors find themselves arriving at a new and even more challenging step in their writing career, and that is attracting an audience and gaining publicity for their newly published work. ReaderViews.com offers valuable resources for this important step in an author's career, and they now provide the latest marketing tool, the book preview. These are videos created to promote books in the same way that movie trailers promote movies, and they are amazing. Go to ReaderViews.com today to find out more about previews. Just click on the previews icon in the menu bar for more information.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
So it's really also about taking the initiative to keep things fresh, like you kind of mentioned earlier, and maybe kind of reinventing the relationship on a regular basis? I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I think that's possible. I think there's a lot of different ways you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to realize that, as I think comes through in the book, it's not something that is for free. It
Good
does
point.
Take work.
Good point.
And,
I think a lot of people expect...
planning.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do actually expect that, you know. They have all sorts of expectations when they get married and how things will just happen, and they don't realize that they actually have to put effort into it.
I think that is the case.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get distracted with career and raising the children, it's very easy to just lose track of all this.
Yes.
You know, you turn around after 10 years, and we've all gained a lot of weight, and... We're on different paths in terms of where our lives are heading.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. So tell me what your thoughts are on sexual chemistry and how that may or may not be a part of romantic love.
Well, I think it's a big part
mm-hmm.
of it, and I think it's a part of the relationship that needs to be kept vibrant and fresh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always reminded of a quote that I heard from a housewife. I read it in the Red Book magazine when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
This housewife, they were interviewing her about, I don't know, some sort of sexual topic, but she said something that was very striking. She said that if God created anything more beautiful than sex, then he certainly kept it to himself.
Yeah.
And that always struck me as giving a context for what a couple ought to be feeling about
mm-hmm.
that part of their relationship.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's important to differentiate the two in your writing, or is it just there? It's a part of the whole umbrella of romantic love?
I think there is a differentiation. I think that there's a separate emotion that has to do with romantic love. And following that, the romantic love tends to, of course, stimulate sexual impulses, and the two then begin to blend together. But I think that it's important to understand that love is really separate from from the sexual impulse.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're entirely separate. It's only when love is exercised properly that sex can then join in part of the blending. I think it's a natural part of what a couple goes through.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think people confuse that issue so much?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with some bad science that took place in the 1960s. I mean, in the 1960s, there was a lot of publicity that claimed that romantic love was just an illusion, and that it was really just this aberrant offshoot of the sexual urge.
Okay.
I mean, I grew up with all sorts of PhDs who really should have known better, saying that romantic love was a pure illusion. It was just part of the sexual urge, and the sooner you could get past it and grow up and have a rational, what they called a rational relationship, the better off we would be.
Hmm.
And so, you know,
what
there was
that
a whole
mean?
Generation that grew up with this kind of influence, and I think it really had a lot to do with this soaring divorce rate that took place in the 1960s and 1970s.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, you actually set this book, Coinage of Commitment. You set it in the 1960s. Why was that time period perfect for this love story?
Well, it was a period that I knew well. I knew it firsthand. I knew it well enough that I really didn't have to invest as much time researching the time and the places as I would with a novel that's set in contemporary time today. Plus, that particular generation has always had a certain cachet with readers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always been a feeling that generation had an optimism that was almost unbounded, at least for a time. And so, you know, the idea of writing a love story about a couple that got their love to be the highest level ever,
mm-hmm,
for that generation seemed like a reasonable pitch.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard from various people or various sources that there's a lot of similarities to the 1960s and the time we're living in now. Would you agree with that?
Gosh, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way. I probably would not agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the feeling of unbounded possibilities was much stronger in the 1960s than anything that I see today.
Mm-hmm.
I think the young people of today are a lot more jaded than the generation that grew up in the 1960s and 1970s.
Okay, interesting. Now, I know that you take on the issue of sacrifice and what these two lovers, Wayne and Nancy, will sacrifice in order to take their love to a higher level. What can you tell us about this part of the story? And is this kind of one of the concepts of you know, your real point of view on attaining a higher love?
It really comes down to how do you measure this? How do you measure what they've achieved? It's very hard to measure something that's emotional, even if it does have some intellectual underpinnings.
Mm-hmm.
So one way that you can measure the level that they've achieved is what they're willing to do for each other. And that is something that I explore in the story.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's a scene where Wayne, it comes down to Wayne willing to give up his college career for a time in order to help Nancy's acting career.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a measure. I won't get into this any further because there's...
Don't give it away.
there's an example of sacrifice on the last two pages of the book that's really the ultimate measure of what love can achieve.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep, readers will have to pick up the book to find out that. So did you feel, okay, you were writing from a woman's point of view, and that's a very strong part of this story. Did you find it difficult? Did you have to consult with any women friends or your wife as you were developing her character?
I did. I really didn't feel like I had any trouble putting the character together.
Mm-hmm.
But there were details that I wanted to make sure that I got right.
Mm-hmm.
I I talked to a number of women friends and my wife and my daughter as well about how they felt a woman would react under certain circumstances, and I consulted with a number of women with regard to fashion issues, clothing. I went to my hairstylist and I talked to her. There's a scene there where Nancy's friend Angela is described, and the hairdo, that scene was put together with the help of my hairstylist.
Okay.
Because of the description of her hair is very poignant in that scene, and I wanted it to be exactly right.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, I understand you have also, is it your editor that's a woman that has really helped you out with this whole process?
Well, yes. My editor, Ruth Thompson of Saga Books, she is the one editor of the hundreds that I queried in trying to sell the manuscript. She's the one who came right back and said, "Hey, this is good. Send me the whole manuscript. I want to read this."
Oh, really?
So it was the start of a very supportive relationship between me and my editor. Later on, I actually held publication up because I didn't quite feel that the prose was as good as it could be, and she was very understanding in waiting, holding up publication until I was ready to hand the finished manuscript back to her.
Mm.
Same thing with the cover. The cover image is one that I designed.
Oh, really?
And you know, all of the publishing contracts give the cover control to the publisher.
Yeah.
And mine was no different. And I went to her and I said, "Hey, the cover is very important to me. It has to be just right. It has to be a perfect expression of the essence of the book." And she said, "Hey, I'm standing back. You go at it and design the cover and provide it to us. We'll use whatever you come up with." And that was just so supportive. It was so encouraging that I felt like I had an open field.
Yeah, to have that freedom, especially on your first novel, is quite unique. So you are very lucky that you did come upon the right publisher for your first book.
I was very happy with it.
Yeah. So you had mentioned earlier that you basically sat down and I think in a matter of a handful of months wrote out the first version of this book. What, you know, with this being your first book, did you learn a lot in that initial writing period? And then, you know, I'm sure the editing and putting it all together to be the final copy took a lot longer than your initial writing. What did you learn, and what would you do differently on your next book?
Well, you're right. I actually sat down in this kind of a blaze of artistic fury. I wrote the first draft in 4 months.
I can just see when you say that, I see papers flying everywhere.
I had a full-time day job, so
oh my
I was
gosh.
Not sleeping very much at all.
Yeah.
And then I took the manuscript and tried to sell it. And then I came back to it after having not read it for about 2 months. This was during the first query campaign. And when I read it, I realized that it was not the greatest love story ever written. And that all of a sudden, it was really important to me that I at least try to get close to that goal.
Oh, okay.
So I did something really out of the box. I pulled the manuscript off the market, canceled all the queries, and I went to not one, but actually two different independent editors to give me some advice on what they felt like the manuscript needed in order to make it as good as I could make it.
Oh, okay, great.
Anyway, that got me into about 7 months of rewriting and polishing, and then I went back to querying. But even after I started the querying, started the second query campaign, I continued to work on the manuscript and continued to polish it because I really felt like the style of writing that I started out with was not quite in tune with the artistic ambition of the story.
How so?
I felt that for this story, there was a need, and this is a little bit against the grain of current writing fashion. I really felt that there was a need to get the reader inside the characters more than is conventional.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to express the character's feelings, but it has to be done very well. It has to be very vivid, and not bog down the reader.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you did a really great job of that. So your whole rewriting process really, really bumped up the content of this novel. Who do you think would most enjoy reading this book?
I think the book is written for women.
Okay.
It's basically written for women who enjoy reading love stories or who enjoy going to see love stories in film.
Mm-hmm.
And especially women who are, you know, wondering if love can be a little bit higher than what they keep reading about.
Mm-hmm.
Is there more out there than just boy meets girl, chemistry, sparks fly, and then through spontaneous emotion, you know, they get together. You know, for those that are wondering if there's more to it than that, and if love can last,
mm-hmm. in the future,
then, mm-hmm. then this is a novel that explores that as a theme.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You really are thinking outside of the box and stepping out of, you know, what you see a lot of the cookie cutter approach to this genre. So it really is unique, and I really hope that readers do check out Coinage of Commitment, because it really is a fantastic concept. Are you working on another project right now?
I sure am. Would you like me to?
Yes, tell us about it.
A little bit about
yes.
it. Yes. Okay. Well, my next novel is codenamed Cameo.
Uh-huh.
It's a contemporary love story about a group of characters who grew up in small town Hanover, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
They go to college at the University of Pennsylvania. Even though this book will be written, as all of my stories are, for women readers, it will give them a glimpse into the delicate issues arising from the weight loss ambitions of the male protagonist.
Oh.
It is shaping up to be kind of a unique offering, and it should be available by mid-2008.
Oh, great. So you're just really busy writing it right now?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Writing full-time now.
Oh, good, good. So, Rob, what is your website?
My website is rcostello, that's rcostello.com.
Okay. And can Coinage of Commitment be bought through your website?
It certainly can. It's also available on Amazon.
Okay. Local booksellers can order it as well?
It can be ordered through the local booksellers. Some of the stores here in Houston have it on the shelf.
Oh, great. Oh, that must be wonderful to walk into a bookstore and see your first novel.
There's really nothing like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's just been great talking with you. I love to talk with, you know, authors that have just put out their first book. So this has really been a treat. And I just want to offer you here the last minute to share any final thoughts you have with your listeners today.
Well, I want to thank you for this opportunity. It's just such a pleasure to be able to reach out to my readers and explain a little bit about what went into this this project.
Great. Thanks, Rob. But best to you, all the best. We hope that you have much success, and I can't wait to have you back on the program next year when you come out with your new book.
Thanks again, Juanita.
All right. Well, there you go, listeners. This has been Rob Costello. His website, rcostello.com, rcostello.com. His great new book, Coinage of Commitment, a romance like no other book out there. We certainly suggest you pick up a copy today. Check it out. Go to his website. Don't think you'd be disappointed. So just want to thank you for tuning in and listening to Inside Scoop Live once again. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.